Hello and welcome everyone. Thank you again for having me this week. Please let me know if you can hear me. I was having a little bit of technical difficulty as I was getting signed on today. Yes, okay, good. And someone requested via Facebook message that these sad songs be more interactive. And I said yes, please. Yes, please. I fully encourage you to send me a message, send me an email beforehand. You can send me a message now, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I stopped asking if anyone had any questions because oftentimes it was so silent. But I'm happy to respond to questions. I actually quite enjoy them. And so I thought we might start as we always do by getting centered, by taking some time to let go of the day, let go of the weekend. And to really settle into our body. And there's two great bodies that we have, is we have this physical body that does all the hard work for us and carries us from place to place and does the heavy lifting. But we also have this wonderful energetic body. And sometimes I forget people don't know about the energetic body. And this is the body that we carry from lifetime to lifetime. It's an aspect of our soul, and it includes the seven chakra centers. And so I'm going to invite us to let go into this body. To relax, to close our eyes, and begin to notice, what does it feel like? What does it feel like to be this energetic body? Is my energetic body awake? Is it alive? Is it online? And so I invite you to come to your root chakra at the base of your spine. And just imagine that there's a bowl there that's pointed upwards. And in each of the chakra centers is a bowl. It's gently radiating with light, radiating with your divine essence. And it's also willing to receive a download of that which is greater. So we can include the second chakra, the hara, a couple inches below the belly button. And I invite you to open there, to relax there. Sometimes there's existential fear or tension. In the hara center. And so I invite you to relax the hara and open it. Welcome the awakening of your own power, your true power. Sense of strength. And as we go up the spine, up into the solar plexus area, We're building a sense of backbone, a sense of inner strength. I invite you to allow your back to be straight, your spine to be straight, for it to be tall and open and receptive. Receptive to the movement of energy up your spine. Receptive to the energies of awakening. Awakening in each of the seven chakra centers. And receptive to God's grace coming down into you and blessing each and every one of us. We're so fortunate to be able to gather in this way, to be able to open in this way. And of course, we're going to include the heart chakra. And I invite you to imagine the heart chakra as a million-petaled lotus. Lotus flower with a million petals. It's open, it's vibrant, and absolutely beautiful. When we begin to open into our divine nature, we begin to discover our absolute beauty, our radiance, our luminosity. This is the seat of unconditional love. As we go up the spine further, we come to the throat chakra, the seat of divine expression. And oftentimes, this center is it's unconsciously or neurotically closed. And I invite you just to have a gentle attention here, along with the other chakra centers, gently inviting a sense of openness, a sense of receptivity. You're opening and awakening to your divinity. And simultaneously opening and being receptive to this greater divinity. Sometimes there's a sense of pressure on the other end of the throat chakra, right below the throat, at the top of the heart. Just notice that. Just gently invite the throat to open, any pressure to go up through the throat and out on the exhale. Of course, we're opening the third eye, the deep center, deep intuitive center, in the space of the mind. We are open and receptive to divine intelligence. Of course, if you feel into the center in a deep way, you'll experience silence. Profound, vast, spacious silence. And the last center, the crown chakra. Again, I invite you to open the crown, to imagine a bowl there, a bowl of receptivity. Many of us think of our chakra centers as being contained within this physical body, but when you really feel into them, you feel how huge they are. Quite huge. When you feel into this bowl, this crown on the top of your head, you realize it doesn't end at your skin. It doesn't end. It goes upward and merges into the flow of divinity. So I invite you to envision that. A huge ball on the top of your head that merges into God's grace, this energetic connection. And we're welcoming. Welcoming God's grace, God's descent into us. We're welcoming our consciousness being upgraded. We are welcoming that which is divine to transform that which is human and that which is animal within our consciousness. And so by this time, you may notice your energetic body feeling very alive. Of course, you can include your arms, your hands, your legs, your feet, your back, the front body, the back body, the side body, above and below. At all moments of life, there are these wonderful descents of grace willing to come into us, willing to descend into us. All that God asks is we are willing, that we are open, that we are receptive. So you never have to imagine that there's a beginning or end to meditation. We can live in a state of absolute communion with God, absolute communion with grace. This is the gift of a contemplative life. But our contemplation does not need to be reserved for Sunday morning or Sunday evening or doesn't have to be reserved for the hours of our life when we are meeting in satsang. To live a contemplative and mystical life, we're choosing to open to grace always, always, eternally. And so our prayer this evening is, God, you show me the way. Lord, you lead me. You bring me from darkness and into the light. You lead me from confusion into clarity. You lead me from strife and heartache and suffering into absolute love, absolute security. You lead me, Lord. And so from this space, and I welcome you all. I welcome you all here this evening. And so I'll invite any questions. And I'll note, and I will also say that when I was signing on this evening, I heard my name a few times, but my speaker was cutting in and out. And so if I'm supposed to do something differently, just let me know what I'm supposed to do. And I see something about my good friend Rick Archer in the message board here, and so if there's anything I need to respond to, just let me know. And I apologize that I had a little bit of technical difficulty signing on this evening. Oh yes. There's been a lot of talk recently about ethics. Yes, Jay, what's your question? Maybe I see. Can I ask you about your ethics of enlightenment work? Rick Archer and I, and then a couple other teachers, non-dual teachers. I think maybe some of you might know Jack O'Keefe from Ireland, John Prendergast from San Francisco, and Kent from Kent Welsh, I believe his last name is, from Open Circle Sangha, also in the Bay Area. Together we met at the Science and Non-Duality Conference, and this came up because there has been a number of teachers, a number of complaints that Rick Archer has received about teachers on the BACAP program. And I mean, he's interviewed 450 teachers or so, and I was one of them. And there were some teachers who were teaching wonderful things, teaching about enlightenment, teaching from this place of spiritual awakening. But it had come to Rick's attention through emails from some of the students of some of these teachers that there were some serious ethical violations happening in the community. And it's a large community, it's loosely structured. And yes, well, there's a number of ways this could be looked at, Jay. So the way I teach is that we are all human, whether we are enlightened or awakened or not. Growth doesn't stop in this world. The growth of our humanity never stops. And I think there's a great misunderstanding about what enlightenment is. In the most basic sense, enlightenment means to see clearly. To see clearly. To experience reality directly. To know what is true and what is false. And ideally, beyond this, beyond seeing clearly and knowing what is true, one would hope that that would be followed up with action. That one's thoughts, words, and actions were in alignment with truth. And I can say this, that as long as we are in a human body, as long as we are in human form, we will be growing. Enlightenment, true spiritual awakening, it's just a step along the way. It's a major step. It's an enormous step. It means one is able to see clearly. It means one's fundamental perspective has changed, has shifted into something much, much greater. It's an incredibly profound thing. Profound shift in state of being. But it doesn't always mean that every aspect of our humanity has changed, has grown as well. In fact, to even think so would be silly. We live in an evolutionary world. Every level of evolution is within our body. We are connected to the collective unconsciousness and the collective consciousness. So, there's no end to growth in our humanity. In fact, I find very few teachers on the path. Very few that actually live fully what they teach. One has to be highly developed spiritually, psychologically. And it's quite unfortunate. It's quite unfortunate some of the great shadows that occur along the path. And I think one of the big problems is that people hide behind spirituality. They hide behind spiritual experiences. People have a grand experience, and it may feel as if no self is here. It may feel as if no human being is here. And then they go off sleeping with their students, saying, it doesn't matter, all of life is an illusion, or, they take the students, huge amounts of money from students, or manipulate students for their own gain. And this, to me, it's just, well, it's unfortunate, it's sad, it breaks my heart anytime I hear about this, and unfortunately, because I work both as a teacher and a counselor, I hear about these stories all too often. I've met with many, many students who've left teachers. Left teachers when they were, after experiencing great pain or abuse from a teacher. And I think if any of us have been, yes, I think if any of us have been on the spiritual path, you've seen this. You've seen great gurus fall flat on their faces. Or ordinary gurus, or everyday teachers. And to me, there's just a general sense of, if there's something within me that's out of alignment with truth, I want to know that. I want to work with that. I want to see it. I want to heal it. And so to me, that has become a major component of the way I teach. So I teach in a way that greatly emphasizes psychological maturity. And so I'm not going to be the kind of teacher, though, that's going to deny that I'm human. I'm going to fully embrace being human. I'm going to acknowledge from the true non-dual place that our humanity is God in form, God growing in greater aspects of divinity. And so when I see these things, when I see the great shadows, from gurus, yes, Jay, like you're speaking about with these great scandals. When we see a great scandal, it causes great pain because we see that this individual is so deeply spiritually developed, and yet in a psychological way, perhaps not so. But to me, it makes perfect sense. They spend a lot of time in a monastery. They spend a lot of time in an ashram. I have a number of friends who spent many years, decades in monasteries, decades in convents, and when they left, because when they left, they had very little psychological skills. They didn't know how to interact with other human beings. They spent a life living in silence and contemplation, and they came out into the world and they were very irritated. Or they were picking fights with others, or they didn't know how to get along, or they tried to start relationships and dating and this and that, and they were falling on their face. And yet simultaneously, while they were in the ashram or the monastery or convent, they had incredible experiences Ma'am had claimed spiritual awakening, spiritual enlightenment. Yet they came out into the world and they fell flat on their face. But to me, I'm not going to judge an individual like that. I'm going to say, yes, of course, this is what happens when we live behind the walls of a convent. We don't get to practice social skills. We don't learn how to date. We don't learn how to speak to other or how to sit in traffic, or we don't even know how to do our taxes oftentimes when we live behind the walls of a monastery. And so it's been interesting to me because I've worked with such a wide variety of individuals, from students to spiritual teachers to monks and nuns or former monks and nuns. I look out at life and I just see that everyone is growing. Everyone is growing. Now, I think the great question is, the great question is, if we have a huge shadow, well, are we working with it? All of us have little shadows with little things to work on here and there. And if we look at what, one of the other definitions of enlightenment, besides seeing clearly, is realizing we are love. We are love. And if we are love, and if we are clarity, and if we are strength, if we are peace, if this truly is our nature, and we see distortions of the truth within our consciousness, we naturally walk towards those. We naturally do the work to heal those shadows. And so, yes, we want to live in a way that embraces every aspect of life. That's what an awakened consciousness does. It embraces all. It loves all. It doesn't judge, but it does have discernment. And sometimes discernment will tell us, hey, I see that I'm, attracted to my students and I'm trying to sleep with them. Maybe I should stop teaching. Maybe I should take a break. Maybe I should go see a therapist. Maybe I should do some, inner work around sex or sexuality or whatever it is. I see I'm getting angry at my students. Maybe I should do some inner work. And so, of course, we want to do this inner work. The inner work is the path. It's the path. And so, yes, let me look at a couple of these questions that popped up here. Yes, it's human. Of course, it's human to be tempted. Jesus was tempted. Now, if we look at what temptation is, it's like, my God, God created, God created sex. God created sexuality. So there's nothing wrong with that. We just want to make sure we have healthy adult boundaries. If we didn't have temptation, temptation's another word for desire. Desire's another word for a healthy sense of sexuality. If sexuality was wrong, God wouldn't have created it in the first place. But I want to be clear here about a healthy sense of sexuality. Teachers aren't supposed to sleep with their students. I'm a big fan of long-term committed relationships and living the truth, living with healthy adult boundaries. We don't take advantage of people. If you're a counselor or a teacher or a healer or a massage therapist or Reiki master or whatever it is, if people are coming to you to be healed, you don't sleep with them. You don't give them financial advice. You don't try to take all their money from them. You don't manipulate them. You don't try to get them to vote how you vote. These are things of the ego. So we want to have healthy, adult, mature boundaries. And so one of the things that Rick and I and Jack and John and Kent are working on is putting together some ethical standards for spiritual teachers. Because in the non-dual community, there's not a formal set of ethical standards. Now, me, because I'm a licensed counselor, I have great standards that I must follow. It's like 26 pages of legal standards, these rules I must follow, and they just make sense. I'm a big fan of ethics. They just make sense. They keep things simple. They make it so you don't get in any trouble. And they're good. And so it's healthy for teachers to have these boundaries. It's healthy for teachers to be educated about ethics, because oftentimes, there's, especially in this day and age, there's many teachers who are even quite young, many individuals who've woken up to this space of vast, spacious awareness. They've realized their true nature. Their heart has opened. But they never studied ethics. They haven't lived long enough to realize what kind of trouble you can get into. When I was at the Science and Non-Duality Conference, I saw a couple other young teachers there. And I saw, there was one in particular, and he had, like a swarm of women, young girls just buzzing around him. And he was giddy, and they were giddy, and I just stood back and I said, "Oh boy, this is probably going to end in trouble." And I kind of know the teacher. I don't know him. I don't know him that deeply, but I was just watching it play out, and I just had a sense that he didn't have any terrible intentions. He wasn't trying to manipulate the students, and I don't think they were trying to manipulate him, but if you throw a little bit of temptation in there and some hormones and some youthfulness, and well, we can get in trouble real quick. And so it's wise to have healthy boundaries. It makes practical sense. But this is a conversation that, if you're 20 something years old and you all of a sudden you have a spontaneous spiritual awakening and you never studied ethics, well, you might get in trouble. And you don't necessarily get in trouble because you're a bad person or evil or something, there's something terribly wrong with you. It's just you haven't developed. You haven't experienced, you haven't grown enough, you haven't lived enough. Now, when I was young, I got in all kinds of trouble. I got in all kinds of confusion. And I learned from my mistakes. I fell on my face in so many different ways. I mean, hell, one of my great jokes is that, I often tell people I wanted to go off and become a monk. And I got my girlfriend at the time pregnant. I told her, "Hey, sweetie, I'm leaving. I'm going to go become a monk." And she told me, "That's great. I'm pregnant." And I said, "Oh boy, I guess we're married." And so that was the experience I had with my first wife. And we make mistakes, but ultimately, when we learn from them, when we grow from them, and to be honest, I couldn't be happier that I made that mistake, because I have this wonderful 16-year-old daughter now who's been such a gift. And she helped to ground me. She helped break me into this world. I've had many, many lifetimes as a monk, and this was a time for God to show up in the form of evolution, God to show up in the form of my shadow, and to help open me and bring me into the world. Teach me about being a parent. Teach me about unconditional love. Teach me about patience and and how to communicate and to love incredibly deeply. And yes, Cindy, you're absolutely right. There's a big difference between malicious, between a malicious intent and being self-centered, and and childlike innocence. And so, I want to be careful here with creating this code of ethics with my friend Rick and the others. There's not a sense of judgment. There's not a sense of, that, everyone's wrong and I'm right, or I know how to live better than others. There's just a sense of this is a conversation that needs to be had. Just like the Catholic Church needed to have this conversation a long time ago about ethics, about priests, and what was going on with children. And there should have been strong boundaries, strong repercussions. Now the Dalai Lama, he has to have this conversation with his other lamas and his, all the monks. He needs to have this conversation, and he does in his community, and so it's important to have. And so, yes, this question from Jay: do you feel that an environment like an ashram can be used to avoid with dealing? Yes, absolutely it can. For a while there, I was doing a lot of work at is a Tibetan Buddhist center here in Southwest Colorado, and I noticed there was a lot of people hiding there. A lot of individuals who are hiding from life. They were just wanting to hang out in the temple and experience, these wonderful heavenly energies of the Tibetan Dakinis. And it was beautiful to go and to sit in the temple and to experience these energies of incredible light, incredible love, incredible brilliance. But I noticed that many of them had children and had abandoned their children. And that broke my heart. Many of them had run away from relationships which were difficult and ran to the ashram. And it was, in a sense, it was the wrong thing for them to do. It might have been the right thing for them to do temporarily, but at some point, I think their hearts knew that I'm just hiding here. And in fact, what you'll notice is the more you have divisive thoughts within your nature, between the spiritual world and the worldly world, there's a good chance there's a shadow of hiding. There's a good chance that you have an incredible bias. And it makes absolute sense to have a bias towards the divine realms. That makes perfect sense. But we must remember that this is God's world. And God's inviting us to wake up in this world. God's inviting us to make heaven here on earth. God's inviting us to transform this evolutionary world into something greater than a human-animal world. God's inviting us to transform this world into a divine realm. And so, yes, growth is going to be a part of our experience. But the question is, can we embrace our lives? Can we embrace our shadow? Can we embrace all the division within our consciousness? Because if you notice, the movement of love, it compassionately embraces darkness. It compassionately embraces confusion. One of the great qualities of someone who is truly realized is that they embrace darkness. There's many teachers who invite you into vast, spacious emptiness. And that's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. It's one of the great first steps in the realm of spiritual awakening. But a more mature teacher will invite you to embrace your life and the life of everyone around you with love. With love. And that requires that we are willing to get our hands dirty. That requires that we are willing to be uncomfortable. That requires that we are willing to walk into the darkness with yes, Jay, an open heart. This is beautiful. Jay's saying, I've been cultivating an open heart before I leave my door to anything. Yes. See, this is what our world needs. Our world needs what Jay here is speaking about. Cultivating an open heart to life. So if you notice, the movement of ego is to avoid pain. It's to run away from darkness. And in a sense, our ego has it's done a good job of keeping us safe in the world. And that's wonderful. It's wonderful as long as we are growing up, as long as we are evolving. You know, 0 to 18 years old, we need to have a strong, healthy ego. But after 18, then it's time to allow something new to come on board, another operating system. We can trust that, oh, it's okay. It's okay if someone is unhappy with me. I don't have to argue back with them. I can meet them with love. I can listen to them. I can understand their pain. It's okay if someone disagrees with me politically. Again, I can open. I can listen. I can begin to have a dialogue with them where I'm not arguing with them. It's okay if my partner wants me to do the dishes more, or to help more with the children, or to, take more responsibility in my life. It's okay if my partner asks me to speak in a sweeter and softer way. It's okay if my partner asks me to look at my shadow. When we have an open heart, we are willing. Yes, Jay. Like you said, we're not always successful, but we're trying. We're trying. And what's important is that we are trying from our heart. And so let me speak about this for a moment, what this means to try from our heart. If you first connect with your heart, if you find and discover your radiance, your luminosity, what you begin to discover, the more you get to know your heart, is that your heart is this space of unconditional love. It has endless energy. It has incredible intelligence and wisdom to it. It knows what to say, when to say it. It knows how to act in the world. And so if we are willing to be quiet, to drop out of our mind, to drop out of our egoic center. If we are willing to listen to the quietest voice within us, which is the voice of the innocence of our heart, and act from that place, the result is beautiful. It's profound. It's powerful. If anyone has ever had a spiritual awakening and want to know how to make this awakening an abiding awakening, it takes one thing for you to listen to your heart, to live from your heart, to live in alignment with your heart. This is how we go from the awakened experience, like a spiritual awakening experience, into a true lived realization. Your center drops out of your head, it drops out of your ego, and it lands in your heart. And you live from this place. What you find is all those voices in your head, they will all fall away. They'll all submit their authority to the heart. But yes, it takes some gentle effort. Some gentle effort in the beginning, some gentle discipline to say no to ego, no to the loud voices, and yes to the true voice. Once you say yes to that true voice consistently, all those other voices fall away. So many individuals come to me and they speak to me about the arguments they have in their head. They'll have three or four voices just in their mental mind arguing with each other, arguing perspectives. And then they'll have one or two emotional voices arguing. I say, boy, that's five voices. I say, where's the voice of your heart? What is it saying? Because when you start arguing in your mind, and I think almost everyone knows this experience, I actually have to struggle to remember this experience of arguing in my head. But people remind me of it, a couple times a day, and I say, oh, yes, okay, I can remember this. But it's to live in a hell world. To live in that place in your head where you have multiple voices arguing. When you come into your heart, those other voices fall away. This is what the Buddha was speaking about when he used the word nirvana and cessation, the cessation of the multiple voices, the multiple personalities. The multiple selves within us all arguing. They cease to exist, they fall away. And then there's one voice in great silence. Great silence. It's much easier to experience this great silence when there's only one voice within you. And it doesn't have to argue with anyone else, especially anyone else within itself. So yes, Cindy's saying, noticing allows my hand to cradle the doorknob. Trying allows me to turn it and willingness to open it. Yes. And trust keeps it open. Yes. Yes, this is beautiful. Beautiful. And so as all these things work together, and at some point it becomes effortless, it just becomes a way of being in the world. And then occasionally we fall on our face when we meet some aspect of our evolutionary self. So I want to be crystal clear here. I'm not painting a picture of nirvana that's absolutely consistent and there's no longer growth. Of course there's growth. Of course there is. I haven't met a teacher yet who isn't still growing. We can grow in the light, we can grow in love, we can grow in compassion, we can grow in our experience of silence, and we can grow in our manifestation of these. Absolutely. I can remember when I was quite young on the path, I used to have this thought that, that a great sage, a great saint was God. And if they were God, they knew how to do everything. They were connected to divine intelligence, so they knew the answer to every question, every mathematical equation. It was silly. It was silly of me to expect a human to be perfect. But I think so many of us, so many students, we have these unexamined ideas about what enlightenment is, about what spiritual awakening is. One of the greatest illusions or delusions is that many individuals think that when we truly wake up, we never experience pain any longer. And I teach the opposite. The further you walk on the path, the bigger your heart becomes, the more you feel. You experience great pain. Great pain. There's just not internal suffering that goes with the pain. All those voices arguing within your head. But the bigger your heart grows, the more empathetic you become. You feel and experience everything. I experience so much feeling. It's ridiculous. Sometimes it feels as if You know, it will just completely overwhelm me. But see, that's one of the tricks of ego, is that it thinks that this is too much. But the beautiful thing is that God gave us this backbone, this sense of strength. And when we have strength coupled with clarity, coupled with love, coupled with yes, Cindy, trust, then we know it's okay to remain open. We don't have to cave to the pressure of fear or anxiety or sadness or whatever it is. We can open to it and embrace it all. And so, yes, I'm glad that we spoke this evening, you know, about ethics. I'm glad we spoke about these things and began to deify what true spiritual awakening is about, true non-duality. Because it's important that we have this conversation. It's important that all this talk, it's not just talk, it's not just philosophy, or that we're not here just chasing great spiritual experiences. It's important that our lives are grounded in love. The point of the path is to love, to learn to love in greater and greater ways. The movement of spiritual awakening is a movement of unconditional, uncompromising love. We mustn't ever forget this. It's a great mistake if we think this path is about us. This path is about oneness. In the beginning of the path, sometimes we experience oneness and we say, I'm experiencing oneness. And there's a thought that this is my experience and no one else knows it. That's a great arrogance. The further we walk, we realize that oneness is the birthright of everyone, of everything. We realize that everything is God. And therefore we work towards liberation, not of oneself, but of all. If you notice, most great teachers, they spend their life living a life of service, living a life of healing. Most great teachers spend their time being like Jesus, holding the hands of the sick, the downtrodden, the confused, the struggling in this world. And so, yes, of course. And to be clear here, so that this talk doesn't come off as being, you know, what's that word I'm looking for? That like a do-gooder talk. We're not doing good from ego, although that could be a great step forward for many people on the planet. We're doing good because that's the natural flow of divinity here on earth. It's the natural flow, the natural movement of God's hand in us as us. We love because we are love, and that's the only thing that makes sense. The only thing that makes sense in this world is to give, to share, to be. But we must first realize our truth. For when we realize our truth, we realize that this is God's truth, and God's truth is awake and alive in everyone. So the more quickly we realize our truth, which is God's truth, God's plan, God's vision of this earth, can become manifest. Because if we are living in a way where we are enslaved to our egoic nature, where we're stuck in that old way of being, it's hard to truly be of service. As most often we're walking around confused and struggling and falling on our face and making messes here and there. And so it's important to follow your path, to give yourself to it fully, to discover how beautiful your heart is, how spacious your mind is, how incredibly strong and indestructible your being is. If we want to be Christ-like in this world, we must discover these things and then live these things. And so it's important that we go forward with beginner's mind. All of us here, all of us have these animal bodies, this human nervous system, as well as these divine bodies, these divine hearts. All of us are growing. All of us, myself included, have countless ways in which we can surrender more deeply, more fully. And so I invite you to sit with this, as we're closing. Over this next week, I invite you to ask yourself, what is my next step? If I truly shine the light of awareness in a loving and open-hearted way, if I look into my consciousness, and if I look out at my life, what are my next steps? What are my next steps? Where do I need to grow? What do I need to change? What do I need to surrender or let go of? These are the great ethical questions, the great contemplative questions. These questions are rooted in love, not in judgment. There's no thought that there's anything wrong with you. Don't go in that direction. For God made you. And God gave us this movement of evolution. If you ever want to think that there's something wrong with you, go ahead and blame God. And if you ever want to think there's something right with you, go ahead and blame God, because that's all it is. God at different levels of evolution. And so this question is what is our next step? What is our next step? How can I be a greater conduit of light and love here on this planet? Yes, Cindy, don't be afraid of just how beautiful our heart is. How could it be otherwise? For it is God's. Yes. Well said. Well, thank you all for joining me. I want to thank you also, everyone, for offering your donations. I noticed that a lot of people are mailing checks, so yes, I thank you for that. There's the address at my website is you can send a check there. There's a PayPal link if you want to use a credit card to help support the teachings. But the biggest thing is I want to thank you all. Thank you all for showing up. Thank you all for sharing your heart. It's such a beautiful thing for me to sit, to connect with your hearts. And so even if you don't have the money to offer a donation, I feel the presence of your heart, and it's a gift to me. So thank you all for that. And may you all have a wonderful night. Peace be with you all. Good night.